This is Wild Lives. I'm Mary Brophy. And this is a series that explores the wild creatures and habitats of Donegal and meets some of the passionate people who monitor, protect, or simply enjoy what nature has to offer us here in the county. Like our first story today.
We're in Ards Forest Park.
That's Stuart Dunlop.
On the west coast of Donegal.
Stuart is a wildlife photographer and blogger, and I've joined him and some friends for one of his favourite pastimes, foraging here in the forest.
Ancient forest, first landfall from the west, a truly wonderful place.
So that must make it pretty unique then in terms of the habitat, does it?
Yeah, we have species here that you wouldn't expect to find anywhere else. Lichens, fungi, ancient woodland is excellent for mushrooms. It's the only place you'll find many of them.
And you do this as it's a hobby really, isn't it?
It's a hobby, yeah. I study all kinds of wildlife, and mushrooms are a very short season for many of them. So we've got to get out in September and October before the frost turn up. I take photographs of any interesting wildlife like I find, you know, leaf miners, mushrooms, plants, no matter where you look, you will find something that you can eat. You know, there'll be berries there. Just over here we've got honeysuckle. You can eat the berries of that. This is the sweet chestnut. Those could be roasted and eaten quite happily.
And are they ripe or are they semi-ripe at the moment?
They're ripe enough to eat, yeah.
Really?
You roast those, dry roast them. The really important thing here is that everything is related to everything else. Mosses require very poor soil, even at the trunk of a tree. They then die back, producing better soil, which helps more advanced, higher order plants to grow and fruit. Everything's connected in the plant sense. But then we've got different insects that live on different plants. So plants dictate habitat, but they also dictate the insect life that you would find in a particular place.
Mm.
Particular mushrooms only live on certain trees. So if the tree's not there, then the mushroom's not there. Some mushrooms are successional, which means they need other mushrooms to have been there first before they can grow. Some would be pioneers. They come in very quickly. They can then do their job, break down the wood a bit, then they die off. Secondary species come in, and that can be hundreds of years later. So some fungi only appear in places like this where the trees are hundreds of years old.
From the car park, we climb uphill and quickly find ourselves in deep forest. Undisturbed, a carpet of vivid green moss hugs the base of the trees. The air is heavy with an autumnal smell of rot, everything dying back to begin the cycle again. This is beautiful and ancient. You really feel it when you're walking through a forest like this.
I always look forward to coming here because there's always something interesting to see. I'm taking you down to an area where, again, it's very, very dark and moist, and I'm sure we'll find some mushrooms down there.
And that is the perfect conditions. Dark, moist and warm,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Oh yeah, that's a Mycena. Mycenas are very tiny mushrooms with very pale gills. The gills are very closely associated with each other. You can see how close they are. They are very fine, very tiny gills.
Yeah. And is he edible?
Almost certainly not. And if it was, then not worthwhile. I classify mushrooms into five groups. Edible and delicious. Edible, but not worthwhile, which means you can eat it. But it doesn't taste that great. Inedible, which means that it's either too bitter or too tough. You can't eat it. Then there's poisonous. Poisonous covers things that would make you vomit, would make you believe you can fly over tall buildings for a while. And then there's deadly. And we have deadly mushrooms here too. They will kill you within 72 hours.
Really?
No cure.
And they're here in the forest?
They are, yeah.
Okay.
So I just spotted another mushroom over here.
Wow, he's massive. So there's a couple of tree trunks just cut down and left on the forest floor.
Yeah.
And there's There's loads of them all around here. They're huge white mushrooms with brown scaly tops on them, all growing out of the wood. What are they?
That's the birch polypore. It only grows on dead birch wood, and that's clearly, this is an old birch that's been knocked over, and the correct thing has happened. The dead branch has been left behind. The mushroom is growing on the branch, and that mushroom will be home to many beetles. You know, so we have a perfect habitat created because it did the correct thing and left the branch in place. So that's one of the ones that is just quite simply inedible.
So this is what again? Birch?
Birch polypore.
Birch polypore.
Yeah. This is a perfect example of how bad a year this is. Mushrooms need humidity to live and grow or to fruit. And there's simply nothing here. We've been too dry.
And apart from the disappointment for the forager, does that have a knock-on impact then on other life?
It doesn't have a knock-on effect or a negative effect on the fungus itself, because the fungus is still in the wood. I've just spotted another one over there. The fungus is still in the wood and is there permanently, yeah. But it might mean that certain caterpillars that eat those mushrooms will be less of those next year.
Okay.
So there are knock-on effects, not necessarily to the fungus, but to supported wildlife.
Yeah, like there's some remnants. Somebody's been here before us.
Yeah, these are usually eaten by wood mice or snails. This is a very common one here. It's bright yellow.
And do you know what that one was now? There's only little shards of it left.
Russula ocrolusia.
Edible to us?
I wouldn't.
They're like little fairy tale mushrooms now. There's three or four of them here, and
you can see
right on the top of the tree stump.
These are Colibias. They would be edible.
All of these are all the same.
Yeah, they're all the same one. They're grown on this dead wood here.
You must have a great time though, because with the photography, it's just like everywhere is another shot.
Well, that's right, yeah. No matter which way you turn, I mean, there are some small mushrooms there. There's another batch over here, little grey ones all. Tiny ones side by side. This one here is the field waxcup. If you feel the top of that, that's very waxy. Yeah.
Wow, it's like, it is like a candle.
That's right,
it's like feeling a candle.
They're quite,
they are much bigger, and
the gills.
The gills, that's what you call the underneath.
The underneath, so that's where the spores are formed, that's how they reproduce.
But those gills are much, they're frillier or something.
Yeah, so this is the field waxcup. It grows in the grassland, as you can see. And again, perfectly edible, very nice.
This is a completely different looking one now again.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, this is the white Helvella, proper name Helvella crispa, and it's always contorted and deformed and curled and twisted and perfectly edible. I would normally expect to find a lot more of these.
Right.
It's a fairly common mushroom, but always ugly.
It is particularly,
This is Hebaloma. It's a poison pie, it's called, and it's deadly. This would kill you if you ate it.
So the fact that I touched it now, if I put my finger in my mouth?
Yeah, just don't do that.
Really?
Yeah. It smells to me quite vile, actually. But it looks quite similar to some of the other ones that we saw, and that's the danger. You know, this would kill you, whereas the other ones are perfectly edible.
Wow.
The problem with eating mushrooms is you've got to be 100% sure what you're doing, because some of the ones that you can eat look very, very much like the ones that would kill you.
And I suppose that's an important thing for the listeners as well. It's such a thing to be careful about.
Don't just go out and guess.
Yeah.
If you do that, you might only have 3 days left to live. I'll get a shot of those.
And then just as we were about to head back, Stuart spotted some real treasure.
Ah! Davy, this is the best of all mushrooms that you can possibly eat. This is the chanterelle, and it's made the day worthwhile.
Oh my goodness, and there's loads of them here, and they're the brightest orange. They're beautiful.
They're really beautiful.
And quite, they're not a symmetrical shape.
Knobbly, I suppose you would call them.
Yeah. Well, that's great. We go back and cook some of these?
Absolutely. And this is what it's all about. This is...
Here, I get a bit of butter in this pan here now. Get us going.
Get it sizzling. Just a little. Turn them over one time.
Oh, the smell coming off that pan. It's
smell of the butter with the mushrooms.
Yep.
Push a wee bit of pepper there.
A little pepper.
Mmm. Oh, it's delicious.
Is that good?
Oh, it's delicious. They really were. But again, as you heard, mushrooms are not to be messed with. Some are deadly poisonous, and you should only go picking them with someone who knows exactly what they're doing. You might only notice them as they flicker against a light bulb, or worry about keeping them out of your clothes. But I've discovered that moths are a fascinating, beautiful group of insects. You're listening to Wildlives. I'm Mary Brophy. And right now, I'm helping ecologist Rafe Shepherd set up some moth traps. So where are we going to set this guy up?
Well, we set this guy up in an open space. The light is so bright that it can draw in moths from maybe 50 yards around.
Okay. Can we head up?
The little box tends, you tend to tuck it under a hedge or trees.
Okay, so will I bring the little one?
Yep, you bring the little one and we'll go out and find a suitable area.
So you won't put both of these into the same sort of...
No, we don't want the two lights to compete with each other.
Of course.
So we put the big one out in the back garden. And we'll set it up in the middle of the largest space we can find.
Okay, well,
now this is the big trap. This is 125 watts.
And for all intents and purposes, it looks like the bottom of a black bin, even half a foot off the ground, and then a clear top put on top of that, and then this steel drum that sits into that clear drum with the light on it.
Yeah. Moths fly into the bright light and they sort of spiral around and eventually come in and drop down beside the light and through the holes in the funnel. They drop down in there and the egg boxes are there waiting for them, and eventually they will settle into them and they'll sleep in there.
Sleeping cubicles.
When they give up the attempt to get out, and by morning they're all dozing quietly. It is a very brilliant light, like a street lamp.
Mm.
And you do have to be discreet about where you put it. It runs on a mains supply or a generator. So again, you're limited to where you can have it.
And is that important? I mean, if you're doing this in the back garden, that you don't want like a yard light or something else that's going to compete with that light?
Yeah, the fewer lights you have in competition, the better of a catch you'll get. So we would never have the yard light on at the same time.
Mm.
It makes it more difficult to catch moths in an urban area because there are so many lights.
Yeah.
But, you know, you will still get something.
And the last couple of nights, we've tried to do this a couple of times. The frost wasn't great for moths, but you think tonight's going to be a good one?
Tonight should be better because the forecast suggests it's going to be warm and fairly muggy. Maybe a bit damp, but surprisingly enough, the rain doesn't worry them too much, unless it's a downpour.
Okay.
A bit of drizzle actually seems to almost help.
That's it. We just walk away now and leave it alone.
Walk away and leave it. Come back as early as you can in the morning. We try to get out at dawn.
Okay.
And switch it off.
There are over 400 different species of moth in Donegal. Since the 1990s, Rafe and a happy band of other moth hunters set traps like these to map the locations of the different species across the county as part of the Donegal Biodiversity Project. They've gathered over 12,000 records to date.
The light switch on here.
I think what I like about moths is the fact that A, they're very beautiful, and B, there are lots of them. So when you start out as a bird watcher and you eventually, you've seen more or less all that's around, you're itching for new challenges, and moths seem to slot into that quite easily. And they do represent the hidden biodiversity that is all around us and nobody ever sees. So it's lovely to get something that is so attractive and accessible to demonstrate what we don't normally see. You can walk through a native woodland and see very little, and you think, well, there's nothing special about this. But that's not the case. There's a lot that's special about it. It's just hidden. Far more species are invisible than are visible. And the, and by invisible, I don't mean infinitesimally small. I just mean hidden.
Early next morning, we check the traps.
So, how do you think we've done?
Well, we'll have a look. So we just disconnect that. And we have the funnel here, down which the moss dropped when they came in contact with the light. And if we take that out very gently, not shaking anything.
See what this did.
See what happened here. There's a bit of an art in putting traps in the right place at the right time.
And that's beautiful. As we opened it, they're all just fluttering up in a kind of a spiral coming right up at us.
Yeah. These egg boxes seem to suit them. They like to settle down and snooze until the morning.
Here's
one.
And you're tipping him out. He's after getting...
Yeah, he doesn't,
nice
want,
little space
doesn't want to move. He's very, very snoozy. Come on.
So what's he narrowing?
This is a species called a red line quaker. You can see the red line going across the base of its wings. That's a late autumn, early winter species.
And he has a lovely big furry head and the... It's a beautiful kind of fawn colour, a different colour to the rest of the wing.
The head-on view of most moths makes them look a lot more human or more like mammals than insects. The quaker is one of many quirky names that were invented when...
There he's gone.
These moths were named in large numbers in the... 17th and 18th centuries.
Okay.
And in those days, they made all sorts of associations that we mightn't make today.
Of course, yeah.
So there are a number of Quakers. There's a powdered Quaker and twin spot Quaker, and there are lots of other strange names with religious connotations, like nonconformist.
Yes.
How they managed to get a nonconformist out of a moth, I don't know.
Now, if anybody knows the sort of pale beigey colour of an egg box, there is the most beautiful moth that I'm looking at here that is almost the exact same colour except for these brown ridges going through his wings. What's he now?
This is called a November moth. Quite a different family from the Quaker. Quaker was a stubby little animal, quite heavy-bodied and short wings. This one is light-bodied with large wings, different family. And this family, they're really more like butterflies than the conventional idea of moths.
Absolutely.
Whereas the Quaker that we were looking at was more of the form of something like, say, a beetle.
But he's so delicate.
But
and
this
so
is very,
pretty.
Very delicate.
It's very pretty.
These moths are called carpets because the pattern is a little bit similar to the sort of pattern you get on carpets. Now, the November moth is... usually the one we get most abundantly at this time of year.
And as he's waking up there now, and as he's waking up, you can see his wings opening up. And a lovely sort of, almost like a wool texture to the edges of the wings. And off he goes into the bushes, happy enough.
Here we have another red line quaker, more cleanly marked than the last one.
There's another wee guy in here.
That's another November moth.
Is it? He looks like he has polka dot, just the way the light's catching him there. Looks almost like a polka dot down the side of his wings.
You're very good at seeing these parallels with...
I suppose we look for pattern that we're familiar with.
Well, I know we do.
Yeah,
and this is what makes it so interesting and meaningful, when you can see something... This is something else altogether again. This is a beautiful little green moth that sits very flat and tight to the egg box, but it turns its tail up at the end. And if you look closely at the green, you can see it's suffused with purple. This is called the red-green carpet. It's funny, you expect winter species to be dull as opposed to summer species, but some of the most beautiful moss that we have are autumn and early winter species.
Conservation is extremely important in this day and age because development proceeds at a pace that is seemingly unstoppable and with very little consideration for anything other than a financial return. So if we are going to preserve the world of nature, and I think that that's extremely important because it's not just of interest, it's of importance in maintaining the health of the planet, and we depend on the planet being healthy for our own survival. So it's important to conserve, but you can't conserve unless you know what you've got.
Rafe, like the others involved in the project, records each catch by date, time of year and species. And he's been doing this for years. Files of meticulous record keeping that provides such a valuable body of research for future study and a baseline for comparison.
A researcher in Trinity called Bridget O'Neill wanted to get her hands on a large body of data that she could analyse to see if climate change was starting to bite. And she was able to show, for example, that spring species were emerging earlier than they were when I started the project. Autumn species were staying out later. High summer species weren't changing that much, and so on. A whole lot of different factors like that could be demonstrated from the data that we had collected, proving inconclusively what we all knew anyway, that climate change was well underway. And species were responding.
Let's see what else comes out. There's another November moth. But here's something quite different. Sitting in the bottom of
right
the box.
Down at the bottom of the trap. Oh yeah, wow. He is a big brute. Oh my goodness. He has the strangest looking head. It's almost like a square helmet on top of that furry little head.
Yes.
And he's brown. He's about the same size as the November moth, but he has the most beautiful white tip to the wing and then these kind of little flecks up the sides of the wing.
Well, If you look at him from different angles, you see the colour changes a bit. He's iridescent.
And there's the green hue and that's coming through along the spine.
Green down the centre of the body and a pinkish tinge to the whiter areas.
He looks like a mottled brown Darth Vader, though that helmet is pretty impressive. Look.
Those helmets are funny. There are a couple that have rings, black rings around the eyes when you look at them head on. And one of them is called the spectacle and the other the dark spectacle. And they look exactly like a pair of spectacles.
What's he again?
Green brindled crescent.
Oh, that's so impressive.
Go on, away you go.
Away he goes. I didn't think I'd be that interested in moths. You know, when you...
Well, they do kind of catch the imagination. I've never seen anybody who has looked at the opening of a moth trap for the first time who hasn't really been sort of semi-gobsmacked at the very least.
That world is full of wonder and we shouldn't go around blinkered thinking that the only world is what humans construct. We have got to take an interest in the natural world because it is awe-inspiring. And that's as good a reason as any.
That was the wonderful Rafe Shepherd. Well, join me next week on Wild Lives when I spend some time in the wild terrain of Glenveagh National Park. Wild Lives is produced and edited by Neil Boyle. It is a Hollybrook production for Highland Radio, funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, with the television licence fee.